Hello and welcome back to episode 2 of the Prodigy podcast. My name is Hassan and for today's episode we are talking to Commonwealth athlete Sierras Eslami, who achieved a bronze medal in last year's Commonwealth Games in Australia in wrestling. So we talk about all manner of subjects, including life as a modern day competitive wrestler, a singlet that keeps getting him into trouble, training internationally, the influence of his family and its wrestling pedigree, ending up cornering for some Japanese wrestlers, and much more. So we have some great conversation and it is real good listening. So a couple of technical points before we get started. We did record this episode in my house, so there may be a few minor noises in the background, but that shouldn't hopefully detract from what is a really fantastic and fascinating interview. So without further ado, please settle down, grab the nearest coffee or caffeinated substance near you, and listen to episode 2 of the Prodigy podcast.
It's getting there.
Man, every Turk I've wrestled, I don't care any of my nationality.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm telling you right now, the best grip. Their national sport is oral wrestling, which is all about grip.
Have you ever wanted to give it a go? Just for a laugh?
I could tell you a funny story. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of it, but every year in London, they have a thing called the Anatolian Festival.
Yeah.
And the oral wrestling team comes there down. And my coach at the time knew the team which was coming. And he was like, if you like, you get to wrestle one of my national team. And I was like, yeah, sure, 100%. I was like, all ready to kind of go. And I made the stupid mistake, like I was telling you earlier, like, you know, I was saying about the 300-pound gi. I wore the Iranian national tracksuit. So when I turned out, they were like, actually, nah, because they thought it was like a little English kid.
Yeah.
And they was like, no, because they don't want to be embarrassed at their own festival in front of their own people. And
you didn't get it.
But I've been trying to go to Anatolia for ages to start competing in oral wrestling.
It's unbelievable. You see them and it's just like, I mean, they're doing it on just like normal dirt ground. Anyway.
But that's what I was telling you, man. Every Turk I wrestled, their grip, by far, you know, anyone, when they grab you, you just can't move. You know, so you won't need to worry about any of those grip training videos, you know?
At 23, and I know we're the same age, but it's just, I'm genuinely astounded.
22.
22.
23 in October.
23 in October. Not even 22, not even 23 yet. And it's just genuinely, like, impressive.
Thank you very much.
How much you've done. What, in terms of that first session that you did, and that first wrestling session you did, what do you remember about it?
Well, this is the thing. At the time I did my first wrestling session, I played football and I was actually really good. I was a really good goalkeeper because I was quite fat and I could take hits. You know, like I wouldn't be afraid to dive and you know, move around and then whatever. But at the time I did my first wrestling session, it was because my best friend at the time also did it and he was national champion.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, why don't you come? And my parents never told me that they actually wrestled, or my granddad wrestled, or any of my family heritage, because they wanted to hide it from me, because they wanted wrestling to find me, because obviously later on I found out there's no sponsorship, no money, no like pro, no whatever. So obviously no parent would want their son to go into something which
doesn't
really...
You got to do
really...
it for the love, right?
Yeah. I mean, my dad told me later on that he wanted me to create my own passion, because obviously like when it comes to cutting weight and turn up sessions, that's down to you. That's not down to your coach or anyone else. That you have to want to kind of do it. But anyway, so when I had my first session, I must have told my dad. My dad never believed it was actual wrestling. So I said, okay, why don't you just take me? Like I was all happy and excited at the time. My first session, it just felt very natural to kind of do. Like I wanted to drop out everything else and just kind of wrestle full time. And even on the first day, I didn't even know what the Olympics was, but I wanted to be our Olympic champion. So, you know,
how old were you at that point?
So it's 2005, 2006. So I think I was seven, eight or nine.
You just thought it was like when someone said wrestling, it was just like a WWE kind
of. Yeah, because at the time, WWE was huge, man. Like, you know, you've never heard of a wrestler. I think at the time, even our association was called British Amateur Wrestling Federation or something stupid. Like, even the name sounded like a fake WWF. Yeah. So
turned up like ready to.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Had my leather pants ready and everything, you know?
Well, man. Well, I mean, talking about your family, like, your grandfather and your dad were, like, pretty accomplished wrestlers.
Yeah, like, my dad was a world schoolboy champion for Great Britain. And with my granddad, see, I was told, as I said to you on the phone, that he was Olympic champion in 1980 Moscow. And he competed in 72 Munich and 76, I can't remember where 76 was. I was told that basically there was a bit of politics behind it because he competed for Iran and he came to Great Britain after the Olympics in Moscow, apparently. He actually got invited here to fix Persian carpets. That was his actual trade. That was his actual job.
Yeah.
He wasn't invited because of sport, but he still happened to compete here. He wrestled for England internationally or for Team GB. He later on became Team GB's fitness coach anyway.
Yeah.
Noel Loban, our last medalist for Great Britain in 1984, was also coached by my own granddad. They were supposed to go to the same Olympic Games, but same politics happened. They didn't give him his passport. And what I was told, because they didn't give him his passport, Iran found out and wiped all of his records.
That's crazy.
And obviously, it was like, when I was younger, I would believe it. And then when I get older, I think, wait a minute, you know, there's results, there's pictures, must be something. There was a medal in his house which had an Olympic symbol on it. I don't know if it was the actual Olympic medal. But I went to a training camp in Bulgaria a couple of years ago. And the guy who won the 74 kilo or 76 kilo said he trained with my granddad at the Olympics before he got his medal. That's the closest information.
I mean, if someone who won the Olympic gold is saying that he trained with your granddad, it's like clashing stories.
Yeah, and also when the Olympic Games was on in London, my dad was the head of like wrestling, so all the federations and stuff were being looked after by my dad and, you know, whatever. And all the kind of heads of the federations of each country knew my granddad anyway. It's like when my granddad came down, was all saying hello. It's been like a long time. It's telling my dad about all these stories about when they wrestled my granddad, how ungood he kind of was. So even if he did or didn't go, he was obviously somebody very important. You know, everyone seemed to know. Everyone seemed to have liked him.
And what's that like for you in terms of there's obviously a legacy there, and your granddad is well known, and your father has competed successfully as well, and just kind of having that as your heritage.
Well, it's kind of a good thing and a bad thing. It's bad that, for example, sometimes I would see it as like pressure, where like I would never feel like I'd feel their kind of booze, so I'm like constantly chasing something which I'm never going to make. But the other good side is like it was actually one of my reasons which kind of motivates me is the fact that I can see it's kind of made for me.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't footballers, there wasn't basketball players, there wasn't, you know, anything else. They were just pure wrestlers. So,
and that, like, that's really, you hear about a lot of athletes kind of going one or two ways. They kind of either push their kids into a sport, whereas you kind of discovered it quite naturally, and they let you just follow whatever sport you wanted to do and whatever you wanted to do.
Yeah, like when I was a young kid and I first started wrestling, I think for the first year it was really, really fun. Like, I remember I didn't have to cut weight, and we would go to Pizza Hut before the actual weigh-in and go to like the buffet and eat whatever we kind of wanted. It was like great. And then in the second year it was a bit harder, because it was like after school all my friends would meet up and go and play and whatever, and I'd have to like get in the car and go straight to kind of training. Even when I was a kid, I was training every single day.
And what's that kind of like when you're growing up and suddenly sacrificing things like social life is quite a common thing already at a young age?
Well, when I was young, this is when I was about 8 or 9, as I said earlier, it was really hard, because at the time I was in primary school and everyone was going out playing football and meeting up on the block and doing whatever. But my dad was like, you know, you can be one of those kids or you can be something better, you know. So
damn.
And in the beginning, as I said, it was very hard, but then I kind of came to terms with it, and then in the end, you know, look where I am now. Yeah. So
it's kind of that thing where you, at the time, you're going, oh, nah, he's not right. But now...
No, yeah, 100%. I wanted to be like all of the other kids, but my dad was like, you know, you can be more than that.
Yeah.
You know, and then when that message just stood with me today, I mean, I could be like the other 98% of people, or I could be the tiny 2%.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's the 2% that at some point it works out, and if you keep putting an effort in, and you're evidence of that. So kind of growing up and then getting to that point, how did you talk about knowing that you wanted to be in the Olympics before you knew what the Olympics were, but kind of knowing, being conscious of the fact that you wanted to be a full-time athlete and like
learning about that as you grow up? How, when did you know that, you know what, this is what I want to do day in, day out?
Well, when I went to high school and I kind of was getting my GCSE results, everything I did was for wrestling. Like, my original plan when I finished high school was to join the fire service, because I heard with the fire service, you do any public service, whether it's police, army, fire service, ambulance, you'll be paid as an athlete in return as you do your public service.
Yeah.
So, and also in the fire service, they have the World Firefighter and Police Games every single year. So I was hearing that they would fund you to train for that, and you could work and everything's kind of fine, because I was trying to just base my career around doing my actual sport.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you take away wrestling, there wasn't an actual job I wanted to kind of do. I then wanted to be like an office person or a builder or any of that. I just wanted to kind of train, because it was always my kind of passion. I mean, whenever I wasn't training, I was watching YouTube videos, I was reading books, I was like studying it, I was doing mental training, physical training, wrestling training, everything I kind of could to become the best, you know.
When you're sort of watching and studying, who are you kind of looking up to at that time? Who were your role models growing up?
It's very hard to kind of say. I mean, I think now if it was Greco, because I wrestle both freestyle and Greco-Roman, I would say Roman Vlasov. He's Russia's number one, and he's won 2 Olympic gold medals. The reason why I looked up to him the most, because he won his Olympic medal in 2012, struggled winning the world championship in 2013, and he lost to this American guy who came out of nowhere in 2014 and disappeared for a year, just literally vanished off the face of the earth and came back and beat everyone 10-0 easily.
Really?
You know, I think he was really mad, because obviously Russia had like a politics anyway. He was really mad, disappeared, trained really hard, came back and killed everyone.
I mean, that Russia-America kind of...
Yeah.
I mean, it's like that love-hate relationship between Russia and America when it comes to wrestling.
Yeah.
I mean, the most famous American, like Mark, like the Schultz brothers and things like that. And I think he spoke fluent Russian anyway, didn't
he? Yeah, Dave Schultz actually lived in Russia for like on and off for about 6 years. That's why he wanted to, he would go there for training camps, take all the ideas and show the Americans.
I heard that like the Russians, I remember reading the book, and he was one of the only fighters that the Russians actually liked and cheered for.
Because he made the effort to learn the culture, the language. I mean, he was going on camps to like Belarus, Moldova, Russia. So they welcomed him every single time. Because unlike the other Americans, because Americans are quite arrogant. They're like, you know, it's only the American way or like no other way. He was quite open to learning and, you know, everything else. That's why the Russians really, really liked him.
Okay. And have you ever trained in the States?
Yes, I trained in the Olympic Center for a couple of months in Colorado. I'm going back again this year in November for 2 weeks.
What's it like to be in a country where wrestling is is one of the biggest national sports and is part of the curriculum and things like that?
Well, my experience of America was quite funny, because at first they was told this guy from England is coming over to wrestle, when they would frown, go, you know, England haven't got any wrestlers, they haven't got any whatever. But then someone told him, oh, this guy is actually Iranian and he competes for Great Britain, even though I was born here. But, you know, it helps towards it. And I trained at the US Army Center in Colorado, and I trained in the Olympic Center, and I trained at a college also. And basically at the Army Center, I made the mistake one day of bringing my Iranian national singlet, and you know,
this singlet just lets you down, doesn't it?
It's every single time. Yeah, I like that day, I don't know what I was thinking, but I put it in my bag, and I must have taken on, I think he was national champion at the time, but he's number 2 now, Courtney Myers. He wrestles for the US Army, and he must have taken one look at me, went to the change room, put on his American national singlet.
Oh, mate.
And all the like colonels and corporals sat around the mat like cheering him on, going like crazy, and I managed to like beat him by like 1 point. But the American way is very different to the European way of teaching. It's like, and from the space of 3 months, I think I was there, I think I learned about one new technique. They don't really do technique. They just spar, and they just try to get their fitness up and their mental toughness. I think I got really, really tough out there mentally and physically, but in terms of technique, it didn't really kind of change.
In terms of the balance, so like they focus on kind of the sparring, conditioning,
what do you focus on when you, how do you balance your kind of the strength and conditioning? I mean, wrestling is, in my eyes and a lot of people's eyes, probably the hardest sport physically you can do. So how do you kind of balance technical training and strength and conditioning training for yourself?
Well, I've traveled to quite a lot of countries across the world, and I see how a lot of the Olympic and world teams train. And what I have noticed is basically Monday and Tuesday should be the really hard days, because everywhere I go to, they have Sundays off.
Mm-hmm.
So they say you have the most energy Monday and Tuesday, so you should give like your maximum effort Monday and Tuesday. Wednesday is active recovery, so it's usually like, I don't know, walking, jogging, swimming, yoga, like light stuff. Thursday a little bit hard, Friday a little bit hard, and then Saturday competition. Usually Thursday and Friday was usually the day you lower your weight for the competition and, mm-hmm. and you know, just focus on your technique and stuff. But in regards to my strength and conditioning, I've always liked strength and conditioning. I've always liked the gym. I mean, as soon as I was old enough to get a gym membership, I got one straight away. I mean, and it's like a bit weird because my gym training is very different to my wrestling training,
because
mm-hmm. I actually have a general passion for the gym. Only recently I've started to do more sports-specific stuff, more explosive, more technical training to match it. But before, it was quite a lot of powerlifting and, you know, general sort of strength training.
What is, like, when you talk about specific training for wrestling, is it based on rounds, explode, or just explosive movements?
Well, for example, on Mondays I would do a circuit, but I would do a circuit which would imitate like a wrestling match. So I would do like you know, shots for 30 seconds, then I would do like medicine ball slams, so mm-hmm. things to stimulate an actual match, but in a gym form.
Yeah.
Basically, the reason why, again, I would do my own gym stuff, I like it a lot more, is, for example, when I am in England, I probably get to wrestle twice, 3 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, my wrestling club is very far from my house. It's like an hour, hour and a half. It's outside of London for me. So I would do a lot of my training inside the gym.
Yeah, you kind of have to imitate it and...
Yeah, I would have to make it as similar as I kind of can to a training session, but with weights, not with an actual person, pretty much.
So do you prefer that to training when you're training overseas, or do you much prefer getting overseas and training with as many partners as you can and actually having that live partner in front of you?
To be honest, to answer that question properly, I would always prefer overseas because I'm doing what I actually want to do.
Yeah.
But for example, in England, I would get a lot stronger here, but I would get more fitter and technically better overseas.
And in terms of kind of countries, you're saying like the European style is much more technical. You're picking up a bit more technique and a bit more focus on technique rather than the States. Is there any particular areas, or is there been kind of variations across other different countries that you've seen or noticed?
Well, to be honest, generally in Europe, the style is basically the same, but the story with me is I wrestled like a kind of hybrid. Like when I was a kid, I was coached by my dad, which is Iranian style. Then when I was a teenager or schoolboy to cadet or junior, which is about 11 to 16, 17, I had a Bulgarian coach, who's now the coach at Roger Gracie. I don't know if you heard of him, Lubo.
Yeah.
He was my own coach. So then I got taught by a Bulgarian, and he would take me to Bulgaria quite a lot of times. And then when I got to 17, I've got a Hungarian coach now. He wrestled in the Olympics in 2004, and he was a European bronze medalist 3 times. Then I got a bit of Hungarian style. And now also I have the assistant female coach of America, so I got a bit of American style. Like, so I've taken all of them and put them into my own sort of, you know, thing.
And is that always worked? Like, is that, have you managed to pick up things from people quite easily? Do you find that quite easy?
Yeah. The reason why I kind of say that is, like, even if you look at cars, hybrid cars are better than normal cars because it's a mix of the two. So you get the advantages of having both together. Like for example, now in our wrestling, the best guys are these guys from one country who are taught from a guy from another country. It's like if you go to Hungary, they have a Ukrainian and a Russian coach. If you go to Germany, they have an Iranian coach. When you're mixing styles together, you're creating a different sort of style, and it's very hard to wrestle someone who has a style just like that. Whereas if you go back like 20, 30 years ago, a German would wrestle one way, a Hungarian would wrestle another way. So it's quite easy to kind of figure out. Put them into a hybrid, it's almost impossible to kind of wrestle.
And those, you think those days are pretty much done, where you're getting people coming in with essentially one style or one form of coaching that they've had?
The problem is now, because of things like YouTube and Instagram and people, you know, moving all around the world, the sport of not only wrestling, but every sport, it's changing. It also, you've got a factor in sports science, nutrition is constantly moving, so sports are moving a lot more forward. So now, as I said, the guy from Germany or the guy from France isn't wrestling like the guy from Germany or France. He could be wrestling a little bit Russian, could be a little bit American. It's always changing, yeah. You know.
And how important to you has things like sports science and nutrition been for your wrestling career? Have you always like found it quite comfortable to, obviously you've been picked up a weight as early as possible, and things like nutrition as well? How has that kind of, how have you managed that? I'm sure like your parents have had some influence over that.
They have a little bit, but for example, my mum never liked amateur wrestling, and she would never understand, for example, weight cutting. Because when I was about 13 to the age of 17, I stayed the same weight.
Yeah.
Basically, I competed at 74, 76 as a schoolboy cadet.
And you just stuck with that?
I stayed with that all the way until I was about, I think even old, I think I was 19 when I stopped competing at 74. But my normal weight from 17 to 19 was about 84, 85.
So you were cutting like a good 10 kilos. Good 10, 15
every
kilos.
Single week. Yeah.
Every week?
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to be tough on your body.
It was horrible, you know? And it was like, the worst thing is, it's like I'd always watch food videos before my weigh, and it would get me through the week, and then after I've weighed in, my stomach would shrink. So I would eat so much, I would throw half it back up, and it was like you never really looked forward to the food anyway when it came. And
what was your like pure indulgence? Did you have a go-to post competing?
I never really had like a specific thing. I used to make this like magic drink where I would get like sparkling water, and I'd put every type of fruit and sugar and salt and whatever into it. It was like my own personal Lucozade. I would always have that afterwards, but for wherever my coach wanted to go out to eat, I never really kind of mind.
As long as it was food.
As long as it was a big amount of food, I never really cared, you know.
And in terms, like when you look at kids who are now growing up competing at wrestling, do you kind of see that they're doing the same thing, or has that changed where people aren't cutting as much weight now?
I still think weight cutting is quite common. I mean, my advice to anyone who's under the age of 16, it's not worth doing. Because, like, for example, my older brother is 6'4". My dad is, like, size 13 feet, but he's, like, 5'6", because he cut weight as well. So I think I was supposed to be quite tall, but I messed it up by cutting weight. You know,
Could have been 6'5", 6'6".
I could have been a proper heavyweight. You know, I feel like a heavyweight in like, a small man's body.
You got it inside you.
Right? Yeah, you know, it's deep in me, but it's just trapped inside a 5'8" man's body. But my advice to anyone at that age is just not to cut weight. Yeah. Just move up with it, you know.
I think that's happening as across like combat sports. The old adage of kind of just cut weight, dehydrate yourself down. There are some MMA competitions now that are making you're having not just to cut weight and weigh in on the day before, but weigh in literally a couple of hours before the fight. And I mean, especially when you're competing every weekend, you're just not able to rehydrate properly.
It's not that. I mean, this is when I started to read into the sports science and nutrition and whatever. I started to realise it's like, I mean, everyone from a sport which comes from, you know, weight classes and weight cutting, people forget it's not about the actual weight cut. It's about how you perform on the day. And I think a lot of people, even myself, were so focused on the weight cut, it didn't really matter about if you won or lost. It's just I just need to make that weight on
The competition's making getting on the scale.
100%, yeah. When I used to cut weight, I wouldn't even care about the competition. I would just care about weighing in at 73.9, 73.9 every single time. I never cared about my result or whatever. It's just making the weight.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at least you can pass that on now. And
you
can, whether that's as a competitor or as a coach, you can kind of at least influence the next generation and show them that there's some lessons learned from that, and they can indulge if they want to rather than indulge after a weight cut. So, talking of training, I mean, combat sports, you're going to get pick up injuries. But how have you kind of managed, especially with that frequency of competition, managing things like injuries and kind of keeping your body ready to perform and ready to compete all the time?
Well, I've only had a couple of serious injuries. My first one was funny. It was my first international. I think I was about 9 or 10. And basically, you know, when you do like a hip throw in judo or jiu-jitsu at the time, I wrestled this kid in the final. I think he might have been from Germany, actually. It's funny, like you mentioned it. he kept trying to do like a hip throw, but he couldn't finish it. So he just kept slipping. Mm. Every time he did it, I kept hitting my nose against the mat. And after like a couple of times, my nose literally came out of place.
And then busted it.
Yeah, and then my dad, being my standard issue dad, just looked at me, pushed it back into the place, but the paramedics came over and was like, you know, carry on.
It's fine.
Yeah, so I was quite lucky. I mean, now you can't really notice it that kind of much, but... Yeah.
You haven't got the boxer nose or anything like that.
You know? But other than that, as I got older, it's staying healthy. Making sure that my diet is always good, you know, trying not to eat too much kind of crap, making sure or knowing what's too much or what's too little, always having that kind of calculation. Now I don't do any sort of running because I tore my ACL. I didn't have it operated on.
Mm-hmm.
I just left it and I had it rehabbed, and now it's kind of fine. But you know, just small things, taking care of myself every single day and just knowing what to do and what not to kind of do. Because as I said, I want to be in the sport as long as I can again.
When it comes to the mentality around training as well, do you find that you're knowing where the line is at training rather than just training as hard as you possibly can every day? It's kind of being measured just to make sure that you don't injure yourself.
It's really hard to answer that again because I come from a wrestling background. It's given 100%, but working with it smart.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So I don't want to say I always know when to stop because I don't. I don't think
any athlete could admit that they're perfect when it comes to that stuff.
But as I've got older, there's been a lot of things I can't do like I kind of used to do because I'm getting older. My body isn't as strong as what it kind of is. So I've kind of slowly started to accept that's the kind of case. But I can't sit here and tell you in front of you, I know the line all the time. So no.
And in terms of being an athlete in UK/Great Britain and competing nationally, internationally, What is it like for someone, for yourself, who competes in wrestling in the UK in a sport? Like, how well supported are you in comparison to, I'm sure, in the, like, we'll go on to talk about it, but when you like walk around and talk to other athletes in the Commonwealth Games and look at how, what kind of support they receive as athletes and how wrestling maybe is different from other sports, what kind of support do you get and what kind of like, how is your training supplemented and things like that?
Well, to start by answering this question, every wrestler I've met across the world, I seem to hear the same problem all over. There is no money in it.
Yeah.
Even the ones that are supported still complain. There's not enough money. There's not enough help. You know, like, for example, I train quite a lot in Hungary. And when you wrestle in Hungary, your club will pay you and also the national team will pay you. And like, Hungary is a really poor country. Like, the minimum wage or average wage is like €1 per hour for work. And even there, a club will pay them like €100 and the national team will pay them like €400. So they're still making €500 a month, which isn't bad. But even there, like, that's like, you know, not enough and it's too small and it's like whatever. But then I tell them, you know, I come from England. We have the third best economy in the world. I don't get anything.
Yeah.
You guys get more than me and your economy is terrible. There's no money in Hungary, you know. But I think every wrestler knows that that's a problem they're going to face. Even in Iran at the moment, the national team doesn't have any sort of money. They're not really paying their wrestlers anything. There's a lot of competitions Iran can't even go to because they can't afford to go to. And that's like the number one country in the world. And even they're like, hey, we don't have anything.
Do you did your dad, and when you kind of started to take this thing really seriously and start to compete on a high level, really put that lesson into you and explain, look, you may not get the support that you probably expect to get?
Well, my dad never had that conversation with me. I think he just wanted me to find out and be like, you know, because I wasn't told about any of these kind of things. And I said, if anything, I don't think my parents, I mean, my dad heavily supported what I did, but he never was like, you know, you have to push yourself, you have to whatever. He was just kind of like,
yeah. It was within yourself to push yourself.
Because he had the same problem, my granddad had the same problem, everyone around him had the same problem. So they're just like, you know, it's down to you.
And when we're talking about competing for Great Britain, obviously Commonwealth Games, bronze medal, essentially, apart from the Olympics, probably one of the biggest international competitions in the world. Let's start at the beginning, kind of being selected for that Commonwealth team. How was it? What kind of process did you go through?
Well, to prepare for the selection, this is when I spent a couple of months in the States, and I went to Hungary for a couple of months to prepare for it. Which was really tough, like in Hungary, like especially towards like the last 2 months before my nationals, it was like, I was like, my face was like bony, I was like tired, I was getting like beaten up like every single day. The main goal for the Commonwealth was just to make my dad proud, because my dad really wanted me to kind of go, because like every Islami with wrestling has never been able to go for some political reasons. So it was really important to him that I went.
Yeah.
To just kind of, well, he calls it like a bad curse, because we always kind of get these obstacles in front of us, which never allow us to show our full potential. But when I was eventually selected, despite all the politics kind of going on, it didn't really hit me, should we be honest with you. I didn't actually realise I was actually going. Even when I went to the like kit day, like, it still didn't kind of hit me. Because I think, like, out of everyone in the team, I was like, you know, everyone thought I was the least likely to medal or to make any sort of, you know, difference. So I was like the kind of underdog, you know. Like, even when we was preparing for it as a team, like, I was like the worst on training camps. I was like, always getting beaten up. I was like the slowest. I couldn't keep up with everyone else. Whatever, they were like, you know, training really hard, really good. The coaches were really happy with them. Everyone was super impressed with them. Whereas I was just to kind of, you know, like trying to like fall behind them, if that makes sense.
Were you conscious of that? Like, did that play on your mind? The fact that you could tell that you may be falling behind the other athletes in the team?
Well, I've had this when I was a kid, and my dad still gets annoyed at it now. Like, my training is different to how I am on the day. Like, I may not train to others as hard and as high standard as them, but on the day, I'm always able to perform. A lot of people don't have that. It's like, you know, even my friends who went to the game, all of them had like mental issues with it. To me, it's not a sort of thing.
It's not something that you struggle with at all.
I never have, and it's great for me, because the reason why I've always had this is because people have always looked down on me. You know, I'm from England, I'm a wrestler, you know, most of my life I didn't have like a proper coach who was sitting in my corner. I was always on my own. So I never had any sort of pressure. Mm-hmm. So whatever I did was better than what they had an idea of. So I always went out and just did my best, and I was always happy with it, you know. So I didn't have any pressures outside, where the others, they're like told, you know, you're going to be this, you know, you're going to be this great, you're going to be whatever, and they always feel like they can't meet that standard. Whereas with me, besides my granddad and my dad,
almost set your own standard, and you just want to perform as well as you can.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's what kind of makes me a different. It's like, even when I went to America, and as I said to you earlier, that it was all looking down at me and like whatever. I mean, I was taking out the best guys they kind of had, and I was just a kid from England, didn't have any near experience as I'm dated, and they wanted me to stay there longer and kept inviting me back all the time, and I was just this kind of nobody.
This South Londoner just turns up to the States.
You know, these guys, they get paid every day, they get all the sports. I had done nothing. But that's what's always worked for me, the fact that I haven't had anything, because I've never had, you know, any pressure. I could just go in and just be me.
Yeah.
You know?
And training for the Commonwealth Games, did you train just as like the Commonwealth team, wrestling team? Was that separate from, did you just do that training, or did you also train with the team that you usually do and like do your own standard training?
So here's the thing. With the Commonwealth Games, when the team was actually officially selected, I mean, this was the first time we was actually funded. It was an actual funded team who got paid to go out and go and train and like wherever. Whereas before, it was like one of them would live in Manchester, another one lived in Netherlands, another one lives in I think she lives in Bolton. So it was like everyone did their own kind of thing, and just for that game, we all came together and kind of trained together, which was a bit weird for me because I'd never actually trained with an actual proper team and had like teammates and you know whatever.
Was that something you quite enjoyed, the fact that all these wrestlers have just come together as you all kind of shared the same issues in terms of being wrestlers in the UK and then coming together?
Yeah, I have to say, I had these two teammates, one called George Ram, who wrestles now at 65, at the time he was 57, and one called Charlie Bolin, who now wrestles 70 kilos. He got a bronze also at the Commonwealth at 65. It was nice to have like good friends like that, who also wrestled, because it sounds a bit stupid. None of my friends now do any sort of sports. They're all like, you know, work in offices, all businessmen. So it's like cool to hang out with people you can relate to a lot.
Yeah.
And a lot more too, you can have fun with, and you all have the same mindset.
Yeah. And you you share the same issues as well, and the same kind of,
you know, and we all had the same goal in our mind, you know. It was great to be around people like that. And I don't think I'll ever forget that, and they'll end up being like my best friends for my life now, you know, from that experience.
And then you flew over to Australia to competing on that stage. Was there ever a point, I mean, you talk about the fact that you're not, your mentality, you never really struggle with. Was that the first time that you came up against anyone of that caliber, or had you competed against anyone before, like any of those opponents beforehand?
I didn't know any of them. I remember I went to an international years ago in Italy, and the Canadian was there, and I thought the Canadian was really good. But I never got a chance to wrestle the Canadian because I pinned Italy, and then I lost to France, and the Canadian beat the French guy. That's when I thought he was really good, because the French guy like mullered me, like beat me like 10-0 in like 30 seconds. But this was when we was like juniors, this was when I was like 18 at the time, so it was like years ago, so I don't know if the standard would have kind of changed by then. But other than that, everyone else, I didn't know who they were, I didn't really care who they were. I didn't even look into any of them before my match.
Do you find that actually it doesn't really, I know a lot of people kind of swing both ways, where they'll either research their opponents to the nth degree, or they're not even concerned. Are you not really concerned about who you are, what style you're probably going to go up against?
The times I have looked into people are only because it's like, well, if I beat this guy, I'd just be like a European number two or world number one. But I don't, like, even when I go to competition, I'll never watch another guy to prepare for him, if that makes sense. Like, my dad would always do it and would tell me to look out for this, look out for that. But, you know, if I wrestle my style, there's nothing you can really kind of do, as long as I stick to my style and don't fall into their style. So I've never bothered with all of that. And I think if you start to look at someone and you start to think, oh, they're actually kind of good and whatever, you fall in that bad mental place, I'd rather just not know and then just kind of just put them in front of me and we'll see what kind of happens. So
you won your first match, and then the second match you lost 10-0 to.
I can even explain that to you if you want to hear the story. But before all of this, by the way, I wasn't even supposed to compete in the actual games. I actually tore my VMO below my knee 2 days before.
Two days before I
competed. I think it was 2 or 3 days before, and I wasn't even sure they were even going to sign me off to compete.
Yeah, I'm surprised they did.
I've got a picture on my phone of, like, you know, all the bandage and the ice on me. But even when that happened, I was just like, you know, I've come all the way to the other side of the world. I'm not sitting out and watching someone else take my medal. But with the guy who was from Nigeria, who I lost 10-0 to, it's really stupid. Like, I faced Kenya, I beat him 10-0. He wasn't very good. And I faced a guy from New Zealand. He was like petrified of me, like, because he was watching me in the, because basically the week before, there'd be three mats you could go and like train on, but you had to book them. So like, for example, all the teams that were there on like one day would be England, New Zealand and an African country, then like an hour later would be like someone else. So the New Zealand team was always there when I was also training. Also the same with the Pakistan team, because the guy who won really wanted to kind of wrestle me, because I think before he lost to an Iranian at some competition and he held some sort of grudge. So I think he really wanted to kind of beat me up. He ended up speaking to me after. It was actually really nice, but he said to me, oh, I should have been you in the final. I wanted to wrestle you. He didn't care about anyone else. But
he just had you in his sights.
Yeah, he was just determined to come and get me. But anyway, this New Zealand guy, it's what I was saying to you earlier, but underestimating people. He was like petrified of me. Like even when before we went to the match, I could see him like shaking. He was really nervous because same thing, I wore that stupid singlet to one of the training days and he thought I was somebody who I wasn't, and he got a little bit, you know, kind of, you know, worried. So when I went out to face him, I was like, this is going to be like a piece of cake. I'll take my time with him. I'll just save my energy, because the Nigerian guy was number one in Africa, and I knew I had to battle him to get to the final. And even that Nigerian guy, he was old. He was like 38, and my stamina is really, really good. Like I can go for ages. So I knew with the Nigerian guy, all I had to do was just get to the second round, and I would have like, you know, got through him, because he's very strong. But he's old, and obviously his stamina would have gone, yeah. And I would have been able to take him out.
He wouldn't be able to keep up with that pace.
So that was my plan. Take it easy with the New Zealand guy, just get through it, you know, save my energy for him. And then like, as I'm like resting him, he takes me down, and I'm thinking, I don't know if did he do that. And then basically, you know the position where you're in like a kind of tripod?
Yeah.
He must have took me down to that, but it's no points unless you touch the actual mat. So I stayed up like this, and he did like a weird gut wrench, and they gave him 4 points, so it was 6-0 in the first like minute. And then like all my coaches were shouting and going, you know, what are you doing? It's just this guy from New Zealand, you can beat this guy, you know, what are you doing? Anyway, I was thinking, what the hell is that kind of going on? Because I underestimated him. I didn't think he was that good, but he was getting more and more confident as we're kind of going along. So instead of saving my energy, I had to put in like a bunch of work to like catch up. Ended up winning in the last 6 seconds. Mm-hmm. I think if the video is on our YouTube somewhere, and like my friends were cheering so much, when they ran down the stairs, one of them almost tumbled down the stairs. They were like, really happy. And in international wrestling, you're supposed to get a 15-minute break in between each match, right? And for whatever reason, everyone kept being pinned or attacked after me.
Oh, so all the matches were ending really quickly.
Yeah, so I literally came off the mat. If you find the video, I think the video's still out there, you'll still see all the sweat on me. Like I was like, you know, I had no energy. I used all my gas on this stupid guy from New Zealand. and they was like, yeah, because it's being live broadcast, we have to kind of go now. We can't give you the 10-minute break. And then my coaches were arguing, saying, no, you got to give him 15 minutes and like whatever. And I was like, when I stepped up with the Nigerian guy, I was like, I just need to just get through this. I had no energy. Like you could see me like panting for air anyway, because I was really tired from the New Zealand guy. Because I literally came off, like wiped all my sweat, took a picture with the Kenyan guy who I first beat, and then went back out.
Oh,
so there was like no kind of break in between. It was a full 6-minute match. Or not like an easy 6 minute, but hold on to the guy, like me having to actually make an effort.
Yeah, you're working hard to get there.
So literally as soon as we go on the mat, the Nigerian guy, he obviously heard me like pamphing, and he saw that was his opportunity, and like, you know, did like a snap down, then went behind me and then grabbed my legs, and I thought, oh, you know, whatever, that's kind of it. So I was like mad. But I can't really blame him, and I can't really blame anyone else. I should have had the condition to allow me to do that for 2 matches.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like now, if my condition was there and I didn't make the mistake of underestimating the guy from New Zealand, I think I would have got through him and gone to the final.
And then when you got to that bronze medal match, and what was your mentality? What headspace were you in? A lot of people, they get to the one, they get hit with a loss during a tournament, and then they're really just trying to deal with the aftermath of that, knowing that they're going to still have to compete. What was your head? Where was your head at that point?
Before the actual match, like I was waiting in the back bit behind the arena where the warm-up area is. And the guy from Sierra Leone wasn't there. So, and everyone kept telling me he's not going to turn up. You just got to get like a walkover. So I was thinking, well, you know, there's no point in me warming up. I wasn't sure what to do. And then he turns up late and he forgets his boots. Yeah, and his coaches are shouting, going, you know, what's wrong with you?
How could
you
get your boots? Commonwealth Games.
Yeah, and then I was thinking, you know, I'm definitely not going to wrestle this guy. So I started to relax. You know, the same mistake I made with the New Zealand guy. And then, so I think the guy from Nigeria gave him his boots. And then we ended up wrestling. But in my head, I thought I already won. And all I had to do was just walk up to the podium and take that medal. And then I had to, like, wrestle him. And again, he wasn't... To me, I don't feel like he was very good. And I started to realise, oh my God, it's the Commonwealth. So I started to be like a little bit slow. And then there's like a picture you'll see after that, like, all my face was like cut and bruised up, and I couldn't open my eye because the Sierra Leone guy was really nervous. And when people get nervous, instead of trying to, you know, beat you and be good, they'd rather just be dirty. So he kept like, you know, headbutting my eye, rubbing his hair against my face, so I couldn't see anything. So I was getting more and more frustrated with him. And then in the second round, I just kind of took him out for four, and then that was it. But I should have beaten way sooner than what it kind of was. But same thing, I just waited and waited till he had no energy, and then started to kind of stick it on him to kind of break him.
Do you come across a lot of athletes who a similar age to you, or who show a similar level of kind of pace and like cardio?
Yes, there are loads of kind of people like that, and to me they're the most difficult. Because the thing is with me, because I don't get to wrestle that much while I'm here, and because I was saying I do quite a lot of gym training, I make sure that my conditioning is like number one. Because when I was saying about when I was in the States, all I did was spar. Like, and even if you look at Americans in all sport, because I had this conversation with someone recently about this, there's no sport which America actually dominates. If you think of England, you could say cycling, you could say rowing. If you think of China, you could say weightlifting. There's no sport America actually dominates. You could say, for example, baseball, but they have a World Series only for American teams. You could say American football, but it's only for American teams. But there's no sport specifically America actually dominate, you know? That's because they don't have natural athletic ability, which is why Americans have a lot of sports science, and they invent supplements, they invent all these other things. So much as I think it's a bad thing, I take the good things out of it. Even though they don't have much technique, they have gas, they have so much stamina. If you watch them in our wrestling, I don't think their technique is perfect, but how they break the Russians and the Europeans, they just constantly go at it until the guy's just like, you know, I can't do anymore. So my training here, it's similar to the American. Just make my conditioning so good, I can just wear them out.
Yeah, and you do see that, especially when you watch like collegiate level.
Yeah, collegiate is really tough because I think there's this like a 8 minute straight match, and it's like if you take the guy down but he stands back up, they get 1 point. So it's forcing you to constantly attack.
And they're just working. It does make that difference when you do see Americans compete. So you kind of get through that adversity of losing the semi-final, and then you get the bronze medal. What was that feeling like, knowing after, as soon as that match was over, that you got that bronze medal?
Well, before my match, I also promised my coach I would win it, because like I was saying to you on the phone, it was his last time coaching for our national team. So I said, you know, when I win my medal, I'm going to put you on my shoulders and carry the flag. And he thought, you know, like I said, because he looked down at me and the training kept up. He goes, yeah, you know, whatever, it's not going to happen. So I ended up doing it, and then I put him on my shoulders and I carried him on the mat while carrying the national flag, which was really nice. But I was just more pleased that, you know, I could bring something back for my dad. And to be honest, like, all the dreams I had of you know, when I was a kid and, you know, growing up, my motivation is seeing myself with the flag when I'm on the mat. It was nice to see it come true. But my whole take for the Commonwealth Games, it was just a stepping stone for what's to come in the, you know, future. So it was nice to get that pre-experience of my Olympic dream.
That photo is really empowering. And there's an article about, it talks about Eastern European immigrants' influence. Yeah, and it is that thing of, I remember reading the quote, like, the grandson of the Iranian immigrants lifting his Ukrainian coach, and kind of that picture is really powerful to what kind of wrestling is in the UK. And like, what's your view on that? Did you think that at that moment I'm representing my country, or was it just more of a like personal? What was your thought at that time?
Well, if you want me to be honest with you, and my answer might kind of throw you when I kind of say that article you read actually upset me a little bit. It's like, because the problem I have, and I've always had this, is that, for example, you know, my parents are Iranian, but I was born in Red Hill. I was born in, I'm sorry, I was born here.
Do you always come across that kind of prejudice? Well, not prejudice. Well,
this is the thing. It's like I'm not English enough to be English, but I'm not Iranian enough to be Iranian. And then I just feel like a kind of alien. So when that article came out, it's like, yeah, you're mentioning, you're putting me on the front of Eastern European athletes and like Iranian, you know, immigrant grandson. But I was born here. I don't speak Persian. I don't speak any other language fluently. I mean, I grew up here. You know, my town is Croydon in South London. But it's like, because this is what I was saying, even with the politics with the international team, it's just like, even when I, you know, wear the flag and I was born here, do everything,
doesn't matter.
Still doesn't feel, you know, English enough. And then if I was to go to Iran, they're like, well, you're not Iranian, you're English. And it's just like, I've always felt like a, you know, constant alien.
Do you come across that a lot on a daily basis in terms of like your people viewing you as a British or as a wrestler from an Iranian background?
Well, this is the thing. To give you a short answer, yes, but it's not really fair. It's just like when people say like it's what I was saying about sometimes it's hard with the kind of pressure. Oh, he's an Iranian wrestler. Well, I'm not an Iranian wrestler. I've never wrestled in Iran. I haven't won anything in Iran. So it's like I'm supposed to be this standard, but then I'm English and I can't keep up with the Iranian standard. And you know, it used to make me really upset. I mean, it still does now, because it's like even when I do everything for this kind of country, that like, I'm still being looked at as a kind of, you know, outsider.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not from anywhere else. When I win my Olympic medal, I'm holding a Great Britain flag. I'm not holding an Iranian flag or, you know, Russian flag. I'm holding England, you know?
It's something that I think it's really important to talk about, because that typical thing of Andy Murray Scottish when he's rubbish.
I was literally going to use the The other one is with France, with Zinedine Zidane. He was best France player, best French player. As soon as he headbutted that guy, he's Algerian.
Yeah.
You know, that's exactly, like, I feel like I'm English up until a certain point where I do something bad, then I go back to being Iranian.
I'm glad you're not concerned or worried at all about talking about that. Because that is something that athletes at that kind of, especially when they're representing their country, they should be comfortable talking about, because it is important for people to realize. Let's talk about the Olympics.
Yeah.
Compete, generally just talking about the Olympics, obviously it's a goal for you.
But to start off with my goal, I mean, to every wrestler, the goal is the Olympic Games. And for me personally, see, this is the thing. If you ask other wrestlers in our national team or maybe around the world, they always feel shy or unconfident to kind of, you know, talk about this kind of subject. They kind of go a little bit quiet. They kind of, you know, mumble a little bit. But I'll say openly, I always believed I'll be an Olympic champion. And the difference is with me compared to other people is I'm not going to be angry or upset. It doesn't happen. I'll just do everything it takes. I'm sure everything I take, it'll lead to kind of something and I'll be happy with it. Where other people, you know, like I've been different to others also in the sense that I've always liked losing. Other people, they hate losing. They want to have this, you know, really good record and whatever. I've always liked losing because at least when I lose, I know what to train for. I know what to go back and do. When you win all the time, you don't know what to prepare for. And then you start to get, you know, a bit arrogant. And you're like, well, I don't need to, you know, do anything. I'm like number one. I've always liked losing. I've lost way more than I've won. I mean, there's some matches I have been upset when I've lost, and that's only because I haven't given it my all, not because, of the actual loss, only because my mindset and the way I've competed wasn't the way I kind of wanted it. But besides that, I've always liked losing. So with my thing with the Olympic Games, from a kid till now, you know, no matter what anyone's told me or people have like put in front of me, it's never gonna, you know, change.
You talking about the fact that irregardless of what happens, the mentality won't change, whether you accomplish winning the gold medal or not. It's a really interesting mentality to have. When you do say that, a lot of people aren't willing to say they want to compete at the Olympics.
Not that they don't want, like a lot of people are shy to talk about their goal of being an Olympic champion because a lot of people feel like they'll never achieve that and they're nervous in telling people their extra goals because they feel like they fail if they don't kind of do it. I mean, I can't speak on behalf of others, but you'll hear that quite a lot if you ask them what their goals are with wrestling. Not just wrestling, in any sort of sport, boxing, weightlifting, whatever, they'll feel shy saying it because they feel like, you know, it may or may not happen. Whereas myself, I know it's gonna happen, and if it doesn't happen, I'll do everything it kind of takes, and I'll still walk away happy. You know, but that's the problem with people today, that they're scared of setting these big goals and failing there. With me, what do I have to lose if I don't achieve anywhere? I've still had a great journey leading up to it. I've met some great people and had great sort of memories. You know, and as I said, I've always been the underdog. I've got nothing to lose. And as I said, if people look down on it and don't believe in it, it's just another person to prove wrong.
Do you think that's why in the Commonwealth Games you were like, this is my stepping stone, like, that kind of mentality around this is the final goal, but I'm on that journey towards it.
Like our team manager also said on the day that I was the only one who didn't have any nerves or was bothered by the atmosphere, where the others, as I said, their training camp and their preparation was really good, but on the day they just, you know, couldn't. I don't want to sound horrible and say not pull through, but they didn't do their full potential. Whereas with me, I was happy with my bronze medal. I felt like I earned my bronze medal. I should have had the conditioning to done what I did with the New Zealand guy, with the Nigerian guy, but nevertheless, I still gave it 100%. And no matter where I go for competition, no matter what country I am going, it's always been the same thing. I've always liked being at the bottom, being able to work my way kind of up. No matter what's happened to me, I'm still here.
How would you go about getting in, particularly for wrestling, to the Olympic squad, and what happens around that?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, I'm just going to start by saying I'm very lucky. I'm being sponsored by my work, Price Building, which I'm very lucky for, because no one else is funded. The only reason why I became funded is after the Commonwealth Games, I had this bit of a bad sort of stage where I came out, I got given £500 and like a pat on my back, and obviously I've only got high school qualifications, I've got no sort of backup, so I had a little bit of a tough time. I was trying to find work, I was doing like part-time work and some little bit of personal training, but it wasn't enough. And then I started to worry and think, oh my god, like, what am I going to do after the Olympics, and what am I going to do if I have a family and whatever. So I started to get a little bit sad. I was in like a really bad sort of place, and I started to do an apprenticeship in car mechanics, and this is when things got really bad. Because everywhere I go, when I do have job interviews, on my CV, obviously it mentions Team GB Olympic athlete, you know, now a bronze medalist. So usually the interviews I have, they forget it's a job interview. They're just so intrigued by the actual wrestling. I usually get the job based off that.
Yeah.
Because I like to see the hard work, the commitment. It's the same if I had like a university degree on my thing. They're just more interested in the fact that I'm dedicated and whatever. Whereas with my job at Peugeot, the first question my manager asked me is, you know, is your wrestling going to get in the way of this job? And obviously at the time, you know, I was thinking, I do really need this job. I was like, you know, no. I'll commit and, like, you know, whatever. So when I started working at Peugeot, I've gone from like training like twice a day and doing what I like to doing like a 9 to 5, and, you know, there's the, like, being paid really badly, being treated really badly. You know, my manager refused to give me time off to go to competitions. You know, wasn't really supportive. But like my first week, he went around telling everyone, I've got this Team GB Olympic athlete here, look at me. But they never wanted to support my training. So it was like a really bad, dark sort of time, and I literally hate every single moment of it, because it was like I'm watching my dream fade away, and I'm going like backwards in a set of forwards, and it was really hard. It's like sometimes I'd have to go away to Coventry for a week to go do all my coursework, and in that week I wouldn't do any training, no gym, no nothing. So it was like, you know, mentally really kind of put me down.
Well, it's such a big structure in your life. Like, training is that, training day in, day out, it just becomes that regime in your life. And for that to then be kind of taken away almost must be quite, it's just
difficult. Yeah, no, it was really bad. So I've literally gone from doing what I really like to something I really hate, just becoming normal. Just saying earlier about the 98%, like becoming the normal, you know, 9 to 5, you know, eating crap out of work, and it was just, you know, horrible. So I had to kind of get out of there. So I ended up leaving, and now I'm studying to be a thermal insulator, which is only a year, but now my work is paying for my trips. They also, you know, pay me money for my job. I can go train on my lunch breaks. It's, you know, perfect.
That's fantastic. And I mean, that's just such a difference from going from a job that people don't, not even that fussed about what you do outside work, to having people there knowing that they want you to continue with your dream.
It's not just that. It's you know, I've always tried to get a sponsor, and I've had to tell people my story over and over again. You know, this is my family. This is what I've won nationally and internationally. This is what I do. My goal is to go to the Olympics. You know, can you help me? And, you know, emailing thousands of people. You know, going into shops, going into businesses, hearing the same answer: sorry, we can't help. Sorry, we can't help. You know, just becoming kind of helpless. And then on top of that, you know, I went to the European Championships this year also, and it was just at the time I was working at Peugeot, and I didn't have any chance to prepare for it. I wasn't really, you know, resting for it, and I lost to this guy from Italy, who, again, I don't think is very good, and I should have won. But, you know, if you want to be honest with you, I wanted to kind of quit. I was like really sad about it. I wasn't sure where to kind of go. So I was really lucky that when I got this new job, they gave me one more, you know, go out trying to go to the Olympics, and they want to not only fund me to Tokyo, but all the way to Paris 2024. So,
wow.
Now I get to go back to the States. I'm going to Japan in December. I'm competing almost 3 times a month this year.
So what's your, talking of competing, what next competitions have you got coming up, and what are your thoughts about them?
I have my nationals in a month. I mean, right now I'm national champion in both freestyle and Greco, so I'm going to try to do the same this year by winning in both styles.
Mm-hmm.
After that, I have an international in Slovakia, I think, and maybe one also in Poland. In October, I have an international in Portugal. And possible I go to Russia for 2 internationals in October also. In November, I have I'm going to America for 2 weeks, then I'm going to Finland for an international, then I'm also going to possibly Malta for an international. In December, I go to Japan for 2 weeks, and next year we'll begin a new calendar.
No, that's just an impressive level of competing.
Yeah.
Talking of Tokyo, the process of becoming an Olympian, getting onto that Olympic squad, what does that warrant? What do you have to do to get to that spot?
Well, Federation hasn't really made it very clear.
Mm-hmm.
All I know is there's an Olympic qualifier. How it works with qualifying for the Olympics in general in a wrestling meet, you've got to do 5 different things. You can go to the World Championship, which is in a month in Kazakhstan.
Yeah.
I think you have to rank top 8 or top 5. If you don't do that, you've got to go to any of the continental championships, so the Europeans, the Pan Americans, the African Championship, Oceania. And you've got to rank either top 3 or top 5. And then you have 3 internationals for everyone where you've got to rank top 2. So you get 5 chances to kind of qualify in it.
Wow. How do you work that out in your own head? Is it purely, right, I take each competition as it comes and just make sure that I get to the position where I can qualify?
Well, I've spoken to my coach in Hungary, and I've spoken to my work. My plan for Tokyo is it's going to be difficult, because this is the thing with the Commonwealth Games. I pretty much did 6 months full-time training, and now mm-hmm. Commonwealth Games, now the bronze medal. I can't imagine what the Olympics is going to be like to, you know, get a medal, because that was the Commonwealth, I was 6 months. So I'm going to be optimistic about my answer here and say, as much as I would like to qualify, I think the aim is more now Paris, because once I qualify and get my certificate in my hand next year, I was openly said, you know, I'll pay you to train full time and do whatever, and now you have a back end, so you don't have to worry about the after bit of the Olympic Games. But I said to him, depending on my results, will depend if I compete in the Olympics next year, but I'm still going to aim for it anyway. That's not going to kind of stop me.
Yeah.
So depending on how I do in these internationals will depend if I enter in the Olympic qualifier. Like, if I feel ready and I feel like I can perform 100%, I'll enter. But in terms of Great Britain, I mean, I have to be really careful what I kind of say when I talk about it. The problem we have is our nationals are open nationals, mm-hmm. so you don't need a passport, a British passport, to enter it. And in my weight category, there's nobody who has a British passport who can actually beat me. So I don't want to sound a bit whatever. it's almost like a kind of walkover in like a way. I mean, I still have to show internationally I'm very good and whatever, but it's not the issue. When we have the opposite of the Americans, the hardest bit is to qualify for the national team. Same with the Russian, because there's so many good guys in America and Russia. Being number one will guarantee you a top three in any international. Whereas for us, it's fairly easy to qualify. I'm not going to say it's very easy, but it's more easy to qualify. The problem is when you step outside the UK, it's just you've just jumped.
Yeah, the pool of wrestlers is just so much bigger in other countries.
You know, so it's a very tough as soon as you can. So we have the opposite end of the stick.
Yeah,
you know,
and I'm sure sort of explaining that to people and kind of people coming from countries where they do have that level of that. Such a huge level of talent, just in terms of quantity of competitors, must be something they have to get their heads around when they meet athletes from the UK.
Yeah, because they're physically shocked. Because it's like, for example, in America last year, they had a guy called Nayshawn Garrett, and I can't remember the other guy's name, but basically Nayshawn Garrett beat this guy. But he couldn't go to the Worlds because I think he had like a knee injury or something. So the other guy went. The other guy came third in the world. He was number two. And Russia had the same problem. Like the Russian number three or five will go compete internationally. He'll beat all the world and European champions, but he'll never be able to go to those big continentals because he's number five or number three. Even if I was Olympic champion, I would still go to Russia and America. I'd go to all of these small folk competitions and I would still try and win there because I'm determined, no matter what I do, I don't think I'll ever be actually number one in the world. Because every country has the same politics where sometimes the number one guy doesn't get to go. I'd always like to go, you know, into these places and find the number one guy and actually, you know, take him on.
Because it may be that he's not on that international circuit.
Yeah, like I know, for example, with Iran, the problem they're having now, like Iran internationally has really dropped back. Because the stories I've been hearing is, for example, the number one guy is no longer going. The number three guy, number five guy is going because their dad, their uncle, their cousin is someone who's in the federation. He's just like, hey, wait a minute, he's not going to go. I want my son to go. So now this problem is happening in Iran, it's happening in Russia, it's happening all over the world. So it's like, you're not even facing the number one guy anymore. When I go to my internationals, I go to sometimes club internationals where you'll get like 10 Russians in a category or like 15 French guys in a category. And, you know, as I said, sometimes the guy who's ranked like 10th in the nation is like really, really, really kind of good. And I've always preferred those competitions than, you know, the main continental ones.
Yeah, just because you know you are going up against the best.
Really, yeah, you know, the guy did get held back because of politics.
Well, in terms of getting to that point where you will compete at the Olympics and your thoughts around that are really interesting, really, really unique to hear. In terms of kind of goals for the future, you're telling me that you started coaching, you've coached before, you've coached some MMA fighters as well. So we were talking about previously about working with Jimmy Manawan, people like that. How have you kind of, have you ever kind of seen a crossover of wrestlers moving towards MMA just out of interest or like people switching?
I see it loads now. It's really, really kind of common, especially in like America, all the guys you see who end up winning like national titles and they're like, you know, forget this, I'm going to go into MMA. 2 minutes now, a lot of wrestlers I kind of meet are kind of switching because again, the harsh reality of finance is kind of hitting them. There's money to be made in MMA. Also now in BJJ, a lot of wrestlers are now moving over there because the Grand Prix in BJJ are, you know, crazy the amount that you can kind of win. Even for me, after I've had enough for wrestling, the other sport I've always been very interested in is Sambo.
Like combat Sambo?
Combat and normal. Because all I need to learn is just a bit of stand-up and a bit of judo and jiu-jitsu and I'd be ready to kind of go. Yeah. Because when I was younger, I also did karate and I did Muay Thai. I won the European Championships in karate and in Muay Thai. I never had any fights, but I was quite good. It was all in Lions Pride, by the way.
So
besides wrestling, in terms of combat, I've always liked, you know, especially Muay Thai, I've always kind of liked it. BJJ I would get into, but the problem is the BJJ in England, it's really expensive no matter where you kind of go, and it's like, it's a shame because in the beginning it was like a poor man's sport in Brazil, they would do it on the floor and it was like cool, but now it's become this like really money crazy sport. But if I was to finish wrestling 100%, I'd go into combat Sambo and normal Sambo. And if I wanted to, at least I could touch into MMA. But the thing is, if MMA, the reason why I don't have a personal interest in it is, again, the mentality of people who are involved in it in MMA. It's like, with jiu-jitsu, I have respect for, because it's the martial art, it's a belt system, there's a bit of honour behind it, there's respect. MMA, you don't, you know...
Yeah, you start to lose that. It's more about entertainment for the...
Yeah, I mean, I've always liked stuff, you know, where there's respect and honour with it, you know? Yeah. Where the MMA doesn't kind of have that. I would get it in the future if I needed the money. Possibly I would drop into it. But I think for me, more on Sambo, if anything.
You prefer the kind of the martial arts to it, the art to whatever combat sport you look at.
Yeah, just, you know, honouring your own courage and having mutual respect for your opponent, you know, that sort of thing. You know, having teammates, having that sort of general atmosphere I've always liked, where I feel like in MMA, especially in the UK, you don't kind of get the people screw over their managers all the time. It's like, well, I'll go where the money is, not where the kind of loyalty is. You know, people not turning up to weigh, you would never get that in jiu-jitsu or Sambo or like whatever, because it's disrespectful, you know?
And they're doing it for the love of the sport. There's not kind of...
That's why, you know, wrestlers do really well in MMA, because, like, there is, you know, in terms of hard, it's practically the same. It's still the same sort of work, but like, wrestlers don't get paid, so it's just grit. They're just doing it out of passion and love, whereas everyone else is doing it for a paycheck.
Well, you look at the current UFC champion roster.
Every single one is wrestling besides one, you know?
It's like Henry Cejudo, Daniel Cormier, who's like Olympic wrestlers who've now gone on to win major belts. Well, like the biggest belt.
Matt Lindland was my coach for a little bit in America, and Henry Cejudo, when he came to London, I got to train with him too. He's very good.
What do you I'd like to know what your thoughts are on Henry Cejudo, because he is obviously now won two belts and an Olympic gold.
He's very athletic. Yeah. Very athletic. He told me, actually, well, he did like a speech in London. Like, he came to London in 2011 before the Olympic Games to give like a speech and to say, you know, he's got to come back and win the medal for the second time and, you know, whatever. But he told me the night before his weigh-in for the Olympics, he dropped 6 kilos. Like, he literally dehydrated himself completely. He said he almost died.
Jesus.
But, you know, as bad as that is, you know, his mindset to have done that, you know, it shows in his MMA now. Like, he's being paid to do that now. And that's there was nothing for him.
Yeah. So if he's doing it for no money, then doing it for money is just added.
And also, Henry Cejudo is quite a funny guy. Like, he was mentioning too that at the time he wrestled, he also was a national champion in boxing. And he said basically the reason why he did wrestling and boxing was he used to live in like a small caravan. And he used to, like, all the older Mexicans used to do, like, gambling, and they would say to him, you know, if you beat up this kid, I'll buy you ice cream. And, you know, that's how he's learned how to box, how to wrestle, how to whip. That's why he was so tough. And even when he went to America, he didn't really do folk style. He literally went straight to the Olympic Training Center at 18 years old, trained for a year, then became Olympic champion. So he's, you know, phenomenal.
In terms of Greco-Roman and freestyle, when you get to that point where you do compete at the Olympics, would you sacrifice one? Is there one? Will you always go for freestyle to compete?
I get asked this quite a lot, and the best way I put it to people is freestyle. I've done since I've started, so that's been about, I don't know, 13, 14 years maybe. Greco-Roman I've only done for about half the time. Mm-hmm. I started Greco when I was about 12 or 13, and the only reason why I originally started Greco is my Greco-Roman coach in Born Hungaria, he was a Greco-Roman national champion. I think he was also third in Europe. He was really, really good, but he was like a big heavyweight, 130 kilos. But when I was staying with him in the morning, I'd have to go Greco with him, and then afternoon I'd have to do freestyle. And it was horrible in the beginning, because, like, I don't know if you ever watched Greco when I do the parterre.
Yeah.
I had like these guys like 55 kilos like picking me up and throwing me over the head. I didn't know what to kind of do, because it's opposite to you know, freestyle. My love for Greco came more because in Greco, there's only about 5 moves you have to do in Greco, but the fact that you have to be physically strong enough to actually do it, which is why I was saying about the gym training. I can do a lot of my gym training to help my Greco. Mm-hmm. And you don't need a mat either for Greco. You can do it on the grass, you can do it, you know, kind of wherever. But with Greco and freestyle, Greco is something I've always really liked. I've never, so like I would enter any competition in iGreco. If you told me there's a Greco competition in Sweden next week, I would fly out and just go and I wrestle in it, because I find it actually really fun. Because it's more the case. It's not even about how good your technique is. It's about if you're stronger than the other guy. It might be a little bit of kind of powerlifting. It depends how good your genetics and how good your general strength is. Whereas a freestyle is you've got to be technical, you've got to be fast, you've got to be fit. Like if you look at, for example, Satyev, it's one of the best freestyle guys ever was. He had no muscle. He was like skin and no bone. But he was like, you know, his technique was perfect. Whereas in iGreco, you would never, ever get a guy like that win. Every single, like if you look at even the weight classes for world champions between Greco and freestyle, they're 57 kilo national champion, oh, sorry, 59 kilo Greco-Roman champion for Greco. It looks like the 74 champion of freestyle. Because they're just so, you know,
they're big just powerhouses.
Well. Yeah. So with the freestyle, it's more the passion why I want to be Olympic championing with Greco.
You're just, it's just the fun.
If you're telling me there's Greco tonight, I would go wrestle. That's why I've always liked Greco. I've never really kind of cared about it, but I've always found it so fun to kind of do. It's like I can grab anyone. If I was to grab like a kind of bodybuilder, I would struggle to beat him because he's physically strong. If he just closes his elbows, I can't do anything.
And I guess it's nice to have essentially a similar but very different in terms of style sport that you can enjoy without maybe the focus of I want to compete this in like at the highest level. I just enjoy it even more.
It's not only that, my like even when you listen to the name Greco-Roman, it will tell you how far back it goes in time. Greco-Roman was actually the first ever sport on this planet. It was only Greco-Roman, then it was boxing, it was pancration, and it was track and field. That was it. There was nothing else on this planet. Freestyle came 1,000 years later, and what's funny, I always tell people, freestyle wrestling was invented in England. Yeah, in England, and yet, just like football, where they're worse at it. You know? But my other reason why I have a passion for Greco and why I like learning it is because all of the setups in freestyle are the moves in Greco, so the arm drags and the underhooks. Now with Greco, so I also learned Greco because it improved my freestyle, you know, so much more. And when a Greco guy takes you on the floor, it's horrible. Like freestyle, you can, you know, kick out, but you can stand up. If like a Greco guy reminds me of like a fat guy, once they grab you,
it's over.
Yeah, it's finished. So that it really helped my freestyle. Like my freestyle went through the roof because my Greco became really, really good. And I'm the only one now in Team GB who competes in Greco and freestyle. None of the others like it. They can't stand it. Yeah,
can't stand it. That's really interesting that you do enjoy it. And I didn't realise that other athletes kind of just... Do you find that in other countries as well?
Well, this is the thing. In Europe, you're taught both. But for example, in Scandinavia and in Eastern Europe, you start off with Greco and then you have the option of going into freestyle. Like in Hungary, you have to do Greco-Roman when you start, and they're like, if you want to learn freestyle, you can learn it. Scandinavia is pretty much all Greco. Some of them now compete in freestyle. And Russia, depending on what part in Russia you're from, some is more Greco, some is more freestyle. If you go to Iran, north of Iran, funny enough, nearer to the Russia, Azerbaijan, Armenia, that's all freestyle. South is all Greco. But in Europe, traditionally, you learn both because they say the same thing I do. It makes your freestyle better anyway. Plus, as I said, me personally, if you put the number one guy for Greco, number one guy in freestyle to compete, me personally, I think the Greco guy would win every single time.
Yeah.
Because, as I said, freestyle came from Greco. And even when you look at all the other grappling sports, jiu-jitsu is another example. Jiu-jitsu came from Japanese jiu-jitsu originally. The Japanese jiu-jitsu was a form of wrestling. So it's like, if you learn wrestling, your jiu-jitsu goes up. You know, if you learn wrestling, your judo will go up. It's like a grandfather to grandson, you know, it kind of passes down.
It is that grandfather sport. Have you come across rugby players who...
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
Because I know that that's becoming more of a prevalent thing, that rugby players are learning how to wrestle now.
Yeah, it's because it's kind of common sense. Like, you know, a rugby takedown is a you know, double leg. Even if you go to America, even some of the best, you know, American footballers who wrestle in, who compete in college, they all come from wrestling backgrounds. Because even if you look at the stance in American football, if you look at an American wrestling stance and American football stance, they're quite similar. You know, it's crazy. But that's why I've always liked wrestling, because with wrestling, you do a bit of gymnastics, you do a bit of weightlifting. So that's why I was quite good at quite a lot of sports I entered, because you've already got the fundamentals.
Yeah.
In
that base level fitness and
yeah, you can touch into anything. It's just a bit like kind of learning Latin. You can know a bit of Italian, you can know a bit of Spanish. Same with wrestling. It's like you've got a master degree in kind of everything.
Master degree in life.
Yeah, you know.
You touched on it earlier about kind of giving out like what advice you would have for other athletes. In terms of people, let's say there's an athlete now who's just started wrestling. What advice would you even give to your younger self, whether that be in terms of training or mentality? What advice would you give to other athletes out there?
I would always say, like, if they're young, make it as enjoyable as you can again. Like stop when it stops becoming fun, you know? Because, everyone I meet doesn't kind of enjoy wrestling. They feel like they have to do it because they've done for so long. I actually still like going to training. Like, I would always get excited when I say I'm training later. Like, if I have a moment, it's just because I'm tired from my work. But other than that, you know, I always enjoy going to an actual wrestling session. So my advice to someone who's young is, you know, keep doing it until it stops being fun. And don't feel like you're forced to kind of do it. And there's no like pressure around you actually doing it. And in regards to weight cut, I would always say that under 16, it's really not worth doing. Literally get your maximum height and your maximum weight as you kind of can. Like, I really wish I was like 6'4" and 130 kilos. You know, just have fun with it. I mean, don't feel like you have to do it for anyone else but your kind of self, and see where it kind of takes you. I mean, I followed that message, and to this day, I haven't regretted starting it, you know?
And I think that shows in the fact that you do still enjoy going to training, and at the point where things either may not be going your way or you're doing it purely for the love of it, there will come a time where passion is the thing that gets you through.
Well, this is the thing. This is what I was saying about actually enjoying it, because at the end of the day, like all those times I was like cutting the 10 kilos a week. Like one time I had a tournament in Estonia and I wasn't supposed to actually enter it because I didn't have like an injury. Basically, I must have cut my knee open, like just below my kneecap. And I had this big scab, so I couldn't drop onto my knee and shoot. Well, Speco came into being handy. But it sounds pretty stupid, but this competition was free only if you were entering it. And my coach was like, you can't go as a spectator because they're going to charge you for the hotel and whatever. So you're going to ask to weigh in. And I was just like, because I must have had this done on like Wednesday. And I was eating what I wanted. I stopped cutting weight. I was doing only like a little bit of Greco in training. I wasn't really training hard. I thought, forget it, I'm not going to compete anyway. And then on like the bloody, was it Thursday? Yeah, it was Thursday night. Thursday night, I must have checked my weight after I had dinner, and it was like 81, and I had to make 74 the next day. And then I don't know how, I didn't eat the whole day, and I must have drifted a little bit. And then when I got to the the early weighing, it's not when you weigh in, but when you check your own weight, I was like 79.2, and my coach was like, you're gonna have to make weight. And oh my god, it was horrible. I had to wear like his sauna suit, I had to wear like 3 tracksuits, the hat, and I ran around the athletic track for like 2 hours. I was like doing like not like shots, but like half shots and pummeling and whatever, and I managed to make it to 73.9 in about 2 hours. It was the most worst thing I ever did in all of my life. Next day I wrestled Greece. Then I went on the match, I thought I was going to pass that. I shook his hand and I just got beaten up. That was about a 30 second match.
Just shows like it is about the performance at the end of the day.
When yeah, but again, like my advice to, you know, that young kid is that wasn't really worth kind of doing.
Yeah,
you know, stick to what's kind of comfortable. Like now, I mean, I compete in 2 different weight classes. Or in fact, 3 different weight classes if you include Greco. I compete at 79 and 86. But the problem is 79 is not an Olympic weight class. It's only 74. Then 86, and wrestling has also changed the rules, but you got to weigh in on the same day now, because people like me and everyone else was doing these crazy weight cuts and yeah, whatever. And personally, if you want my opinion, I think it's stupid how they've changed it, because weight cutting has always been a part of wrestling anyway. You can't really kind of stop it. As much as it sounds like I'm going backwards here, it's a part of the sport, but I don't recommend kids to kind of do it.
Yeah, it's almost like people are going to try and do it on the same day.
Yeah, do you see what I'm trying to say? So I think it's bad, but it's a part of the kind of culture. But anyway, my normal weight is about 82.
Yeah.
And then Greco-Roman, they have an 82 weight class, which is also an Olympic weight class, which is why else I kind of like Greco. I can just weigh in and I can compete any sort of time. So now I compete at 79 and also 86. And the other problem is what I was having in the beginning, I'd have to wrestle at 86 because they didn't bring in 79 until only a couple of a month ago. Even for the Commonwealth, I weighed in at 81.2. And
from the 86 category.
Yeah, and it was all like, after the weigh-in, I saw them get on the scales, it was like 91, 89, they were like huge. For me, this is what I'm saying about my cardio. Because they're bigger and they're heavier, I have more gas, so that as long as I move around and where I'm at, I've always said if I make it to the second round, I can beat this guy. It's the same as the Greco guys I was saying about earlier. Once they grab me at 86, I can't do anything.
Yeah.
But I compete at both. I'm comfortable competing at both, but I feel more optimum at 79. 79, I feel like an animal. 86, I feel, you know, not bad. I can cope with it.
But you are fight. Do you feel like at 86 you're fighting people who maybe naturally sit at a larger weight anyway?
Yeah, but this is the thing. I feel like it angered quite a lot of people because, like, I used to kind of take the mic. I would go to weigh, they'd see me eating and drinking loads. Like, I would get on the scale, still have all this food and drink in my hand, and I'd still be, like, 83, like, maximum 84. And I see them, like, you know, sweating, cutting away, like, just about get to 85.99. I feel like the guys at 86 will still get annoyed with me because, as I said, I had no pressure on me. Their pressure is, as I said before, is making the weight. And then as soon as I go to wrestle them, I just use my gas tank against them because they've had to cut weight.
Yeah.
This is the advantage of us saying with kids. If the guy has had to cut weight, you're physically got to be fitter than the other guy. So you kind of got to drop into the American style and just wear that guy out. Which is what I've always used at 86 kilos. And 86, I feel less pressure. Because I've even had to cut weight, I'm more relaxed. Whereas 79, there's a bit more pressure because the category is tough, but I feel really good at 79.
Yeah.
But I don't have the physical advantage as I do, or the conditioning advantage as I do at kind of 86.
Yes. And 79 is that weight where, I mean, there is in BJJ you find it a lot, is 79 is essentially the average man weight.
Average weight of a man is about, I think, 81, 82 kilos. Yeah. So that weight class is always, you know, stacked.
Is always stacked. Yeah. What do you think sets you apart? Apart from your mentality that we've touched on, what do you think makes you different from the next athlete? What do you feel that really sets you apart?
I'm trying not to sound like not humble by saying this, but I watch quite a lot of motivational videos, and I watch a lot of videos about guys you know, who are champions, not just in our wrestling. Like, my other favorite athletes are like Jackie Robinson for baseball. Yeah. He's one of my favorite athletes. Michael Jordan, you know, quite a lot of in different athletes, you know, across different sort of sports. And I've always seen this common trait, because this is what I always look for. I always look for, no matter where they come from, what sport they do, I try to find the common things these guys do and bring it into my own training. And what I've always noticed is they've always had this one special gift. And the gift they had was, you know, being different. It is something which stood out compared to everyone else, because they wasn't only remembered because they were number one. The style they did their matches or they competed in was different to everyone else's. They had their own unique style. And that's something I feel that I have, because my goal is not only to be Olympic champion. That's just, you know, now it's a much smaller goal. It's only, like, to me now, I am any goal, but it's to be remembered for winning and doing things in a certain way. It's like, with me, as I was saying to earlier, like, I prefer losing to winning personally, which just sounds really weird as a kind of athlete. But I, you know, the terms of respect and, you know, these sort of things, these things are more important to me. Like, for example, there's a match from London 2012 of India versus Kazakhstan. So I think it was for the bronze medal. You could probably find it on their YouTube. 66 kilo bronze medal final. And then the Kazakh guy was winning, and then the Indian guy was trying to get behind it. No, he took him down and he tried to like roll him over, like you know when they do that bent leg thing.
Yeah.
Instead of like pulling his chin, he bit his ear.
The Kazakh guy.
The Indian bit the Kazakh guy's ear. His ear started bleeding. And the Kazakh guy was like complaining. And he's complaining. He's rolled to his back, and the Indian guy won. And you know, to me, you know, he's happy he's got his medal, but I wouldn't be happy winning the medal. Yeah. That's all.
You know, that medal wasn't won with honor.
Yeah, you know, and that's what my goal is, to be remembered more for my style and for what I did on the mat, not you know my achievements. Because you know, some of the greatest wrestlers that was out there, you know, aren't always remembered anyway. Even if they were multiple world and Olympic and European medalists, they're not even remembered because of the medal. The ones who are remembered are the ones with the unique style. It's like LeBron James is a way better basketball player than Michael Jordan. If you look at his, you know, assists and the points he scored, he's way better. But Michael Jordan had a unique style. Like Michael Jordan's dad, for example, Michael Jordan's dad died while he was competing at the Olympics. He still managed to get and pull his team. It's things like that which make people unique and different. I think my key thing is I've been different to everyone else. I felt different since I was a kid, and I still feel different now. Like, I feel like you put me in a room, I always stand out. I can't say specifically what it is, but I think I have something when no one else has. You know, as I said, being a you know great Britain wrestler, everyone looks down on. You know, I still pull through every single time.
Yeah, and you kind of change that into a positive where that is part of you, and that's what makes you
different. I always focus on what I have than what I don't have, and I think a lot of people, they make the mistake of complaining and of thinking, you know, I don't have this, I don't have that. Like, especially at the times I didn't have funding, a lot of people I knew dropped out of wrestling because of that. There was like, there's no hope, there's no, you know, way forward. I didn't use that as an excuse. Even my match against the New Zealand guy, I said, wasn't an excuse. So, you know, why am I gonna, you know, use these things to hold me back? I always focus on what I have than what I don't have.
That is really enlightening. To round off, I asked my last guest, Ben, who turns out he was a massive superhero geek anyway. But I have told you about this before. But we said if you had to build, even if it's like martial arts, like if you had to build your perfect person, your perfect superhero, what things would you combine to make them as good as they could be?
As in, like, I have a choice to have anything.
Anything you want.
So it'll be four things.
Yeah,
there are probably four things you wouldn't really expect either. In terms of knowledge, I'd like to be like a master tradesman. I'd like to be able to fix anything.
Yeah,
nice. Like build something, you know, fix a car, you know, electricity, plumbing, whatever. I've always liked that. If in terms of like a, I don't know, like a power, I've always wanted to have like unlimited cardio and unlimited strength.
It's underrated. And
You know, and not just strong for sports. Like, you know, if I was like a power lifter, like being able to deadlift or squat or clean it, like a.
Do you want
to
do like an Eddie Hall and like deadlift?
Yeah, 100%. That's why I said to you, I wish I was 6'4" and instead of heavyweight. You know, because the only reason why I got quite strong is all the guys I would go gym with was always like 100 kilos. So I'd have to be forced to keep up with those sort of weights. So I would love to be that size. I'm like a heavyweight in a small 82 kilo, body.
Cool.
Yeah, so I'll say the unlimited strength, the unlimited cardio, the master tradesman, and also to be like a master in like all martial arts, and not only martial arts. I don't know about any of the other sort of stuff, but you know, and that's just more because be able to kind of teach people all these cool different stuff, not just for myself to be like, you know, like a UFC champion or whatever. I've just always had an interest in learning things just like that. And the other one would be a master in like all our languages. So I could communicate with everyone and you know, anything.
Have you picked up much languages from all your travelling?
The problem I have is, like, for example, my family, they on my dad's side, they speak Russian, Turkish, Azeri, and Persian. So it's like I get different greetings in different languages. So I've never been able to learn one. And then on my mum's side, she's French and she's Mauritian, so she speaks French and she speaks Creole. So it's like I hear all these abundances of languages. I've never been able to, you know, master one. When I lived in Bulgaria, I spoke like a little bit of the basic. And I speak the basics of most languages. The hello, how are you, you know, wrestling, tea, and thank you and bye. But I've never been able to speak any of them sort of fluently. And then my coach in Hungary, he speaks, you know, okay English, but you know, I speak only a basic kind of Hungarian. And I've lived on and off there for like a year.
I mean, you speak wrestling in a lot of languages, I'm sure.
Well, it's like you don't have to speak wrestling. You just kind of grab someone and you kind of just kind of get on with it. And that's another great thing about sport. I mean, I have friends all over the kind of world. Like with me going to Japan, for example, this guy... he's in the national team. He's number three in Asia, and I've got another friend who's number three in the world at 79. I've got another friend who's number one for 86. So I've got like the perfect training partners. I basically the 79 and 74 guy. They came to a tournament in Ukraine when I was also there, and everyone was a bit horrible to them because they're Japanese. I was being like a little bit racist. I've been like bullies. Like when they were training, I was giving them like a really hard time because Japanese people are very friendly, very respectable, very like whatever. And they had no coach, they had no one with them. It was just them. And then in the training in the morning, I was training with the 79 kilo guy, and you know, I was sitting there training with the 74 kilo guy because they loved training with me because I was the only one who wouldn't try to beat him up or eye poke them or injure them. So I became really good friends with them. And their English wasn't very good, they spoke like, you know, little bits and like, you know, like a broken English. And ended up sitting in their own corner when they was in Ukraine. I was like the Japanese national coach.
The Japanese head coach.
Yeah, Japanese head coach. And basically, on one of the days, I think my friend was fighting for a bronze medal. He was like in the pool for a bronze medal, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And like I must have went off to go find my actual team and my actual teammates. And he came up to me, which was like, where have you been? We're trying to find you. I have my match in two more matches. I need my coach. He was going like proper crazy. And then I ended up becoming really good friends with him. So now I get to go back and see him in December, which I'm like really happy for. And he ended up being really good friend. But barely spoke any English. You know, not everyone gave him a hard time. But, you know, it's crazy. That's what sport is.
Yeah.
You know?
The Japanese mentality around martial arts and about combat sports and the honour... must really appeal to you. And
that's why I have such a big interest in kind of going. I mean, they were very respectful towards me, whereas like, you know, my friend at 74, he faced a guy from Azerbaijan, and the guy at 74, he's young, you would think he was 17 or 18, and he's facing like a 26 year old man. And he was getting frustrated because that Japanese people are really quick, and like forget that in America, Japanese conditioning and stamina, they're like, you know, he wasn't even sweating. Like, I don't know what they're doing. Like, before their matches, that they don't warm up because they want to save the energy for the match. So they will go out cold. They will sit there in their singlet, you know, with their arms crossed, and they will just wait, nothing. And they will just go onto their mat. And the Japanese kid was winning against this Azariga, and he was getting really angry with him. And I watched him literally put his thumb into his eye, and then put his thumb into his mouth, and then push him and try to fight him. And I had to throw in the brick. I was like, what are you doing? You know, you're a big man against a little kid. And he was like, no, it's fine, it's fine. The Japanese started saying sorry to him. And I said, you know, he punched you in the eye. He tried to fight you. You know, you don't have to say sorry to him.
That's mad. That's mad.
Yeah.
Well, that is everything. I think we've nearly hit 2 hours, and that has flown by. But thank you so much. I don't know if there's anyone you want to shout out, anyone you want to let know in terms of your Instagram, social media?
Yeah, sure. If you want to follow me, my Instagram is Lami. Just thank you to my sponsors, Price Building, for making my dream come true. And thank you to my teammates, George and Charlie.
Yeah, and thank you for coming.
And also thank you to Legion Wrestling, my club in East London.
We'll leave some links and stuff in the description.
Cool.
But thank you so much for coming down. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.